interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy hump day to you. And it is a hump day Wednesday, May 29 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. 2 hours, ready to max it out today. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Both of us, two of Acadiana's most wanted, inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We'll talk NBA playoffs, LSU baseball, and I promise today we get you a full scouting report on Arizona State baseball. But you bet your backside, I'm leading off one of the last days of May with LSU Alabama football. And if this one got past your radar today, shame on you. I'm going to tell you why that is an oversight on your part. And we'll take phone calls as well in today's opening segment. When you're ready, 706-0111. Earlier today, the SEC on CBS announced its doubleheader date. And you'll recall this is always the way it goes down, at least since 2010. Bookmark that date. We're coming back to it. But since 2011... through 2018, eight straight seasons, the first Saturday in November was appointed to the SEC on CBS doubleheader for a very simple reason, and it was obvious. It was going to be the Tigers and the Tide that night. Not anymore. September 21 is the announced doubleheader date, and it's pretty obvious that the intention is to put Notre Dame at Georgia as the lone CBS night game for the 2019 season. My reaction to that, LSU, Bama, not in primetime for the first time since 2010, I freaking love it. LSU needs every step possible to deconstruct this game as the be-all, end-all game of the year every single year. My biggest takeaway from this, it can only work in LSU's favor that this game will no longer be at 7 o'clock. As you've heard Ruffin Roderick say on this program, as he watched Ed Ogeron and company almost go just full-on, just ranting, raving, you know, caveman lunatic style down the hill before this year's game, oh, by the way, at like 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon, this team, this program, to an extent, this fan base, has gotten too up for this game, too early, too many years in a row. And it's become a bit of a mental block. Anything that's possible to make this game more of just another game is incredibly welcome. And especially in a year where this thing's going to be played at Bryant-Denny Stadium. And so you think that's an insignificant nugget that LSU-Bama won't be at night this time around. I think it could mean everything. Now, don't hear me incorrectly. LSU still has to beef it up in the trenches, as Ogeron said after the Tigers were blanked last November. Of course they do. They still have to get more competent, consistent, and fear-free quarterback play. I think there's a lot of reason to suggest that that will happen this year, where it hasn't, really, in the past, at least the past 8 years. But think back to that 2010 game. LSU, Bama, Les is eating grass. Yeah, that was that game. Tigers are going for it on fourth down, running the end around, not the reverse. Know your football rules, people. To D'Angelo Peterson, and the Bayou Bengals win a glorious day game. Yeah, all right, let me say that right. Day game. CD, what are you trying to make me say there? A glorious day game. LSU won inside Tiger Stadium. I think this is great news. I think there's an opportunity for this to become just a little bit more routine and a little bit less hyper buildup. Now, some things that are attached to all of that that I wanted to get to as well. I told you yesterday that LSU Texas, which, by the way, won't be a day game. There we go. I'm saying it like a champ now. But that game in Austin, I told you yesterday, there's one service that has LSU opening as a three-point favorite. The Golden Nugget has now opened its window on college football, and this game in particular, and they're debuting LSU at Texas with LSU as a one-point favorite. So this one's going to be intriguing. I mean, they in the desert, they see this game as what and what. -3, -1. Again, we're splitting hairs, but this game is seen as basically about even. Now, ironically, the night game that's going to take LSU-Bama's place on CBS, at least we suspect it will, Notre Dame at Georgia, Bulldogs are a 9-point favorite right now via the Golden Nuggets. So I'm not sure anybody really suspects that that game is going to be that hotly contested. It could. But there are two things we know. That NBC, the Notre Dame Ball Channel, has long had a monopoly on the Fighting Irish's games. So this is probably pretty smart business, I would imagine, by CBS, snatching up what would normally be the Peacock's cookies at NBC. The other thing, if you watched Georgia play at LSU last year, there was a lot more than Georgia's allotment of red that was in the stands. But if you watched Georgia at Notre Dame two seasons ago, the year that Georgia went to the national championship, I mean, it was almost 50-50 in South Bend. That's not an exaggeration. Again, if you watched it, if you listened to it on TV, you know. Georgia fans absolutely took that one over. So I think there might be a little bit of, I don't know if payback's the right word, but there might be some retribution on the mind of Brian Kelly and the Golden Domers. Laughed off of the biggest stage yet again once they made the playoffs this past January. The last time they played Georgia, as I mentioned, Silver Bridges fans came in and bought up every ticket that was possible. So it's not a bad business move by CBS, and it might just turn into a good on-field thing for LSU as they look to reverse a curse that dates back, as I mentioned, until what? Saturday in November of 2011. Again, I'm going to tell you that I think this is a very good thing. A day game. There it is. In Tuscaloosa. Not bad at all for LSU. Hopefully the guest list, not bad for you either. Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com. Coming aboard in our very next segment. Yeah, we got a preview. We are the North, not Game of Thrones. Toronto taking on Golden State. And how about home floor advantage to the Raptors? Can Kawhi Leonard and company pull it off in upset fashion? That plus a meeting that was projected to happen today between Anthony Davis and David Griffin. We'll talk all things NBA with Steve Kuyler on the other side of this break. The On Deck Circle with James Moran. Oh, yeah, not on a Friday, a hump day edition. At 5 o'clock, we'll get the LSU side of the Baton Rouge Regional, and knock on wood, I think we're going to pull it off today. At 5:45, I'm willing to promise this time around, Andrew Bell, houseofsparky.com. You need the Arizona State perspective, and you'll get it today right before we send you to Five Guys, Stories, and Lies. The interview with Andrew Bell is at 5:45. Don Allen and company take over at straight up 6 o'clock. All right, we'll be right back in with Steve Kuyler. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Get in on the conversation. Call on the game hotline. 706-0111. 706-0111.
All right, we've got our NBA Finals matchup. Now it's time to discuss Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. We'll waste no time getting out to the Artco Equipment Hotline, and it's our pleasure to bring back aboard Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com. How the heck are you, Steve?
I'm well, my man. How are you?
life is good here, and I think, at least in these parts, people wouldn't mind seeing the Golden State Warriors fall, knowing they'll be without Kevin Durant, Boogie Cousins for at least the first few games, and that it's going to be on Toronto's home court. Do you think the Raptors can maybe gain some respect and get off to a good start in these finals?
Well, I think maybe. I'm not going to give you a definitive, all the way in. I think the Raptors are going to run this thing. I just don't think they will, but I think there are some things about Toronto that you watch, right? You know Kawhi Leonard's going to be that guy. He's been that guy all playoffs, both ends of the floor. Pascal Siakam has been incredible for them. The question marks are Kyle Lowry, Marcus Gasol, Norman Powell, Fred VanVleet. If those guys were who they were against Milwaukee, this thing's going to be a really good series. If those guys go down to what we'll call their median, where they normally are, I don't think that they're much match for the Golden State Warriors, even without Kevin Durant. So it's going to be about those next tier guys. It's going to be about, can Kyle Lowry be an all-star level guy? Can Fred VanVleet continue to just bury every shot he takes? Because if he can, then this thing's going to get out of hand for the Warriors, and then they're going to have to face something they really haven't had to deal with in a while, and that's being down going into their own building. So, it'll be interesting to see. I think this thing's going to go five games, maybe six. I want to believe Toronto's going to be better. You use the word respect. I think they've earned a lot of respect getting here, but getting here isn't the goal. You've got to compete. I think they're going to get at least a game.
Steve, I'm very fascinated by just how, I guess, dual way of a player that Kawhi Leonard has been. So when you look at the defensive options that you have when he faces Golden State, who are you putting him on?
That's the interesting question. You'd probably go, hey, Kevin Durant, but he's probably not going to play until this series gets back to Oakland, if he plays even at all. They're saying day to day, but he really hasn't done any on-court work. So that means, are you putting him on Steph Curry? I don't know that you do that, because of Steph Curry's quickness, you're going to draw crazy fouls. But Kawhi's length and his hand size becomes really interesting in trying to guard Steph Curry. It's probably Klay Thompson. That's probably who you want to put him on and see if the other guys can slow Steph Curry down. But I think we've seen this. Kawhi gets on the best player no matter who it is, and let's see how that works out. So wouldn't shock me if it's Steph Curry. I don't know if I'm drawing up the X's and O's, I put him on Steph Curry.
Talking NBA Finals right now with Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com. Give him a follow on Twitter if you haven't yet, at Steve Kuyler NBA. Going the other way, the confidence that the Splash Brothers, Draymond Green, have gained, maybe eating up a little more of the pie without Kevin Durant. Are they pretty full steam with that thing going into the finals? Have they figured out life without KD pretty thoroughly, in your estimation?
They have, and actually look better. I mean, the silly thing is say, oh, they're a better team without Kevin Durant. No, you're always better with a top three player. You're always better. But they're good, and I think they're reminding everybody that before Kevin Durant got there, they won a championship. And, when Kevin Durant has missed games, they've won games. They've been really good because of their depth. And when you think about Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they're great. But again, then you go to the bench and get Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, and what Kevon Looney has been for them really for the last 6-7 weeks has been incredible. So they've gotten a lot of productivity from a lot of guys outside that big three, and that's why you always say, I've had executives say this to me a bunch of times, the first three get you there, it's the next three that win it. And when you think about all of the championships that have been won in the last decade, it's been the unheralded guy that got it done, whether it was Mike Miller in the corner, Ray Allen in the corner, Manu Ginobili with a timely play, Channing Frye, Andre Iguodala, pick a guy. It's always somebody that's maybe playing the fourth, fifth, sixth man option that really kind of has to have a big game for you to win a finals.
I know I'm asking you to speculate here, Steve, but how different might this Golden State team look next year?
I think pretty, smoke signals usually end up being true, especially when it's as dominant as it is about Kevin Durant's future. I think Kevin's going to move on. Where he moves on, is he going to be a Clipper? Is he going to be a Laker? Will he be Brooklyn bound? Is he going to the New York Knicks? Like everybody said, I think that's still unclear. But I don't think Kevin's ever really been truly happy in Golden State. I think you always want to believe the grass is greener and you can go and be part of this heralded group. But he was always kind of treated like you jumped ship. It was always treated like you robbed somebody. and there was always an asterisk behind every one of his accomplishments. And I think that just gets frustrating to a point where you've got all the money you need, you've won championships and finals MVPs, now go do what LeBron did and take over a franchise and make it your own. I think that's ultimately what Kevin's going to do, and I think this will be the last run in Oakland for Kevin Durant. But look, there's a reality to it too. They can give him $300 million. And if Kevin is true in his statement of wanting to stack as much paper as possible, the Golden State Warriors are printing it.
We spoke on this program, Steve, at the beginning of the month, and you were starting to believe that it's more and more possible with David Griffin on board. Maybe the Pels find a way to leverage AD to coming back and at least trying this out. Reports are that the two sides met today. Have you changed your mind at all on where this is and where it might go for the franchise?
Well, the one thing we know today that I didn't know then is now you've got a future, and that future's name is Zion Williamson. So you don't need to blow kisses in Anthony Davis's ear, because now you can cash him out and probably get a better aligned future with kind of what's going on in the NBA right now. You know, if you keep Anthony Davis, you've got to get in the hunt. You got to get in the hunt right away, and that's going to be really hard to do when you look at where, say, the Houston Rockets, Portland Trailblazers, Denver Nuggets, Golden State Warriors are. You need a lot of things to break your way. You cash out Anthony Davis and get another high-level draft pick and maybe some younger kids along the way that line up better with Zion. Now you're kind of in the same mold as, say, Orlando, Atlanta, you know, pick an up-and-comer that's, you know, really starting to find their way around young guys. What I've been told, and I think this is true, I was out in L.A. last week for the Pro Basketball Combine, the secondary draft event. Anthony Davis has been training at Mamba Sports Academy. The coaches who have been around him for the last 8 weeks, all pretty much in lockstep, said the same thing. Nothing's changed in Anthony's mind, at least as he's verbalized to them. The whole hope from David Griffin was to sit down like they did today, present everything the Benson family has agreed to kind of do by way of funding the organization, and then what all the moves look like, and see if Anthony buys into the vision of David Griffin. If he doesn't, I think David Griffin's going to trade him, and I think it's going to be a really quick process. I think it'll be done around the draft. I think it's to the highest bidder. I don't think they're going to care at all where he goes. It's about what he returns, and I think that's probably what is going to happen. But like I said, David Griffin's an awfully convincing salesperson. We'll see what he can do with AD with this meeting today.
Digging the insight. We got one more coming at Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com. We'll stay on that same path. It's been reported that the Pels aren't wild about Kevin Knox. I'm curious how much you think that maybe takes New York out of it, even with the number 3 overall pick. And when it comes to Boston, they don't pick until 14, but they've got a wealth of them. So I guess the 3 front runners we've assumed for so long, New York, the Lakers, the Celtics, what do you make out of them as trading partners for AD?
All of them have issues. You know, here's the truth. You know, Boston Celtics are probably losing Kyrie Irving, which means the future of that franchise is now Jason Tatum. They're not going to put him in a deal for Anthony Davis. The whole idea was pair Anthony Davis with Kyrie, and I don't think they're going to do one without the other. It just doesn't seem like that's likely. With the New York Knicks, maybe you don't like Kevin Knox, but do you like Mitchell Robinson? Do you like Dennis Smith Jr.? Do you like the fact that you could put R.J. Barrett next to Zion for the next 10 years and see what that's going to yield in the NBA? There's a lot of things there, I think, with the Knicks, and you know, the fact that you could also kind of shove an ugly contract down the Knicks' throat too, you know, is some reality. And then there's, you know, look, you move Anthony Davis, does Julius Randle want to come back? You know, what does that look like? If you're going to go all young, what can you get for Jrue Holiday? So there's a lot of things that I think go into all of this, but I think the idea that the Lakers are better than the Knicks or better than the Celtics or better than the Lakers, all of the deals we've heard about have issues, and we haven't heard the Houston Rockets involved yet. We haven't heard the Orlando Magic, Miami Heat, L.A. Clippers, Portland Trailblazers offers yet either. All of those teams will run to the table if David Griffin's genuinely going to open real bidding on Anthony Davis.
Fired up for the NBA Finals and what comes after for the Pels. Steve, thank you so much for taking us through the paces. Enjoy the finals yourself.
All right, my man, anytime.
There you go. Steve Kuyler again on Twitter, and he's a great follow there. Really interactive with the fans, at Steve Kuyler NBA. Couple of quick notes, then we'll get back in. I got a question for you. We'll switch it over to LSU baseball with said question. But here are your notes. Tasman Mitchell has been named LSU's third basketball assistant. This according to Will Wade earlier today in Destin. Mitchell, formerly Denham Springs High. Oh, yeah, I go back that far with the guy. LSU played overseas for quite some time. Mitchell has been on board, kind of in that Kevin Falk role, player development on the basketball side. He'll now be replacing Tony Benford, who about a month ago left for TCU. On the LSU football side, according to Ed Ogeron, Kelvin Joseph will be sticking around the program. Ed told the Baton Rouge Advocate he had a talk with Kelvin Joseph, and everything is fine. As far as he knows, everything is good going forward. Joseph will be a second-year corner out of Scotlandville Magnet. And finally, you probably heard this during the two-minute drill, this one's a bummer. And Clint, you can't peg this one on me like you did George Springer, but Carlos Correa heading to the IL. Can't keep it on the DL anymore. You got to put him on the IL 4 to 6 weeks with a ribs injury. We'll talk plenty more when we return, and we'll get you involved as well. But get the numbers ready. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Hey, sometimes we are pretty darn fortunate on B2BS. I have no problem telling you that. Between Steve Kuyler, Kurt Heelan, both have been dealing and giving us the goods, I guess, since Thanksgiving. I mean, they've been fantastic. So, again, thanks to Steve Kuyler, BasketballInsiders.com. That was a great look into where the Pels are. I want to react to it a little bit, and then I've got your sink or swim question. This, of course, is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. We'll take your reaction to the Pels, talk a little NBA Finals as well. How different do you think Golden State looks after this series? Let us know. We got nothing but time until 5 o'clock when James Moran joins us. You can call the show 706-0111. I'll stay on the Pels side of things, reacting to Steve's jewels there. The fact that Boston is fading into the background as a trade partner, I'm okay with that. And yes, when all of this first blew up toward the first of the year, maybe February, somewhere in that range, when we got that Woj bomb at like 6 in the morning, that Clutch Sports Management was crying for help, get my man out of here, my initial reaction on this show was Boston is the best trade partner. And yes, I was thinking of Jason Tatum. There seemed to be an understanding that Danny Ainge would be willing to give up a whole lot, draft picks included, to get him. That sounded very appealing to me. I've been watching Jason Tatum since he was on the EYBL circuit playing Nike shoe ball in high school. Phenomenal athlete and player. But it's interesting that they're falling maybe a little bit out of grace as far as the lead dog to get AD. The reason I say I'm okay with it, it's not meant to be an about face on my part, but things change. I'm okay with the fact that you don't have to dance with the devil a little bit here. I'd rather deal with the Knicks, James Dolan and company, as I've told you before, than Danny Ainge if I have to. And people have come on this show. Brendan Sir is one of them, by the way. Longtime assistant for the Detroit basketball Pistons and Chuck Daly. And he made no bones about it, saying that this guy's as competitive as anybody's ever been around in his life. He'll take the shoes off you, the socks, if he thinks that he can win something. And so hopefully he didn't have to take the shoes and socks off of the Pels. I don't think David Griffin's going to let that happen. But the Knicks, certainly a big player in this. The Lakers, probably not so much. Who else? We're going to find out. Because like Steve, I think this gets done before the NBA draft, June 20. Maybe right before then, but I do think that it gets done. All right, enough of that for now. I told you that I had a LSU baseball question for you. We got to get ready for the Baton Rouge Regional. It's like 2 days away, less than 2 days away, before USM and ASU square off. But this question is all about LSU, and I'll get to it right after the music.
Exciting and new.
This one will stretch you a little bit. I don't think it's cut and dry. Your sink or swim question of the day: who is your LSU baseball MVP so far this season? Call us up. Let us know. We got real estate. You could buy some. 706-0111. Give us your 2019 LSU baseball MVP. I'll give you the particulars on this season, and then Clint will lead us off. Tigers went 37-24. 17-13 in the SEC. Slightly on the pedestrian side from what Tigers fans are used to. 5-5, I believe, against in-state non-conference opponents. But LSU did finish strong, winning 3 games in the SEC tournament. They are the number 13 overall seed in the NCAA tournament. All that said, CD, up and down year, a lot of injuries to the pitching staff. Through it all, who is your MVP for this team?
I'm going to lean towards Cade Beloso. The guy has just been incredibly consistent throughout the season. I've enjoyed watching him play. The guy definitely has that ability to be a top player. You wind up having 9 home runs in the year, and on a team that definitely doesn't necessarily hit a whole lot of home runs, that was towards the top of the rankings. So honestly, I love what I've seen from Cade Beloso all season, so I'm going with him.
The kid started 53 games, Beloso, and played in 57. Yeah. Out of a total 61, he was incredibly durable for a freshman. Hit 282. You're right. Those 9 bombs, that is third on the team. Cabrera had 12. And my guy had 11.
Okay.
I don't mind telling you that for me, it came down to Josh Smith and Antoine Duplantis. I'm going to lead toward Duplantis. Don't call me and accuse me of Homer Radio just because I'm going with Lafayette High's finest. But I think there are some reasons why, for me, he edges out Josh Smith. Now, speaking of durability, again, they played 61 this year. Antoine started every single one. Josh Smith started 60, played in 60. It's remarkable. They were both at the top of the team in batting average. The power was more for Duplantis, 11 jacks compared to 8 for Josh Smith. And I'll give some credit to Josh Smith. With 17 steals, he was far and away the leader on the team. So he probably did a little more all around, if you will. On base percentage was higher. I mean, he did some special things this year, Josh Smith. But Duplantis took it up several notches when it comes to the power. 11 homers, 61 RBI, with then 6 runs scored of Josh Smith. So they were very similar there. They both had 81 hits exactly. I'm going to tell you, though, that with only 28 strikeouts on the season, I think Antoine Duplantis was unbelievably efficient in his final season in Baton Rouge. So I don't think it's fair to go with any pitcher. There was a stretch of time where Cole Henry looked as devastating as any weapon that LSU had offensively, defensively, otherwise. Cole Henry for a stretch was unbelievable. I think we're seeing maybe down the stretch of this season that Landon Marceau is starting to turn back into that guy a little bit. We've seen stretches where Devin Fontenot has been unbelievable. Matthew Beck, ditto. But if you're going to talk about stringing it together consistently for an entire season, I'm going to go with Antoine Duplantis beating out Josh Smith by a nose. But I like that you're going out a little bit on a limb, CD. Cade Beloso, the freshman from John Curtis, he's very impressive. And you know, from one of the games I caught in person this year, the Wally Pontiff Classic, he absolutely hammered a ball. And I mean hammered it off the home run foul pole. So I've watched that power firsthand. He generates a lot of it. So Cade Beloso is going to be a special, special player in this program. And it's funny to think that maybe even more so than a Daniel Cabrera, he was the guy that they relied on down the stretch for some of that consistent power.
Yeah, they really did, but he's a guy that's definitely kind of come on as the season's progressed. Obviously, I think he's going to be a guy that the LSU Tigers are going to rely on for years to come. He brought up the fact he's a freshman, and he's able to perform at that high of a level. It's impressive.
So we got time for you to weigh in. You can call us, 706-0111. We've also got the Sink or Swim question posted on Twitter and Facebook. So hook us up, let us know. We'll get your thoughts on the air. And we'll go straight to Baton Rouge to learn a little more about the latest with LSU baseball. James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine at straight up 5 o'clock, and we will get you your ASU Sun Devils preview behind enemy lines. Going to Tempe at 5:45. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, Locked and Loaded, ready to return on 103.7 The Game.
Show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Ready to rock one more time in hour number one. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D, and happy to take your phone calls. Let's get that first of the day. 706-0111. What's on the table so far? We got a question for you. Who's your LSU baseball MVP to date in this 2019 season? You can also weigh in on the NBA Finals. Steve Kuyler said he thinks it goes 5, at the most 6. He likes Golden State. What say you? Also, my lead topic from today. Oh, I'm more than happy to bounce back there. We've got a day game. Yes, that's how we say that. Between LSU and Alabama football. That's right. September 21st, the SEC on CBS has announced a doubleheader. The intentions seem pretty clear. They're going to take the Gators and the Vols at the 2:30 Central Time slot, and the nighttime game will be Notre Dame at Georgia. My very quick thoughts on that subject, again, in case you're just tuning in, love it for LSU. Absolutely love it. This program needs every step possible to deconstruct this game as the be-all, end-all game of the year, every year. This can only work in LSU's favor. They've got to do it between the lines. They've got to do it with game prep. They've got to manage 2 weeks off before the game. All that still remains. But taking some of the humongous stakes off of this game could only be a weight off of LSU, in my opinion. I also think it's a pretty savvy business move by CBS, and I don't mind saying that. LSU-Bama's been really good business. Pretty good gravy train, I think, so far for CBS. But the fact is this. NBC has controlled Notre Dame football rights for forever. Here's an opportunity to dive into the Notre Dame share because they're playing in an SEC venue. It's a really cool game as well. Teams that have been in the college football playoffs the last 2 years, and it was a game in South Bend that came down to the wire 2 seasons ago and that Georgia fans gobbled up tickets. So not a bad move at all, in my opinion, by CBS, and I think it could pay dividends for LSU as well. All right, CD, who do we have that wants to come aboard and play in the sandbox?
Yeah, Chad was on the line. He didn't want to play in the sandbox, but he wanted to kind of throw this question your way, asking if they could change this down the line to being a night game again. But of course, I'm not sure how that works out.
Don't believe so. It's a good question, Chad. Unless I'm mistaken, look, that has happened before and it will again.
Yeah.
Oh, that's when you chime in.
Well, I'm saying,
mute yourself, sir. Mute yourself. Chad, it's a good question. I don't believe it's possible. I don't think this works in the same fashion that the typical flex options do, right? And so normally you would hear on a Monday that a game a week and a half from that point, right? So you hear on a Monday that a game the following Saturday is going to be at a certain time. Typically that's the type of flex option that CBS is allowed. And then they go after their top pick. Everything falls in line after that. The mothership times two, Jefferson Pilot. Okay, I'm joking. But I was just seeing if you were still listening out there. Raycom Sports. All right, still joking. But no, I don't think that you can change this. I believe this one has to be set in stone. That's why they're coming out with it so early. And again, from an advertising marketing standpoint, I get it. I completely get it. And I think the farther out that they can have Notre Dame supporters, backers, alumni know that that game's going to be on CBS at night, that's a pretty darn big deal. And that'll be one of the marquee non-conference games of the entire college football season. Between the Hedges, Notre Dame, at Georgia, are they ready for some big boy football? Haven't been the last few times that they got to January. We'll see how it goes for them this time around, the third week in September. Again, you want to weigh in, we got time. 706-0111. I know we're bouncing around a bit. I gave you some options, whichever you want to talk. I'll choose to circle back to the NBA Finals. I have not yet given my pick. They do start tomorrow night. One thing that intrigues me, I like the idea of Toronto having home floor advantage. This is part of what you sacrifice if you're Steve Kerr in Golden State and you go opposite, right? I mean, they've already had a team that won 73 games in the regular season, and they didn't win the Larry O'Brien trophy that year. You'll recall they were up 3-1. Draymond kicked the guy in the nuts, and then LeBron and Cleveland came back and won. In a nutshell, that's how it happened. I'm not saying that Golden State should be quaking in their boots, not even a little bit, because I agree with Steve. He said it. I'll repeat it. They look better without Kevin Durant. Now, in reality, you're not better, but I do think this. Over the course of a regular season, you need Durant. He can be an MVP every single year if he wants to. He's only done it once, but Kevin Durant can be a regular season MVP with his volume of scoring, the way he gets it done. He could do it every single year. I mean, if he was James Harden on that Houston team, it would be inconceivable the numbers he'd be putting up right now, truly. But I do think in the postseason, in limited spurts, it's possible that they could be better without him, not needing the volume 4 to 5 times in a week. How does it work this time around? Well, let me tell you. You play Thursday, you play Sunday, you travel. You play Wednesday, you play Friday. Think about the spread between those games. You're going to play 4 games in a span of, 9 days? I mean, that is laughable if you think about that compared to a regular season. So, yeah, during a stretch like that, there's no reason that some of those old dogs on Golden State can't look better and perform better without KD. I'm going to take Golden State, and I'll take them in 6. I think there's a chance that Toronto wins 1 of the opening 2. They've got home court. If the opening 2 were in Golden State, I'd say that the Warriors get 2 dubs by the Bay. But as it is, I think Toronto defends the North but gives away overall home court advantage. So I do think that the Claw, Kawhi Leonard, and Toronto get 1 of the first 2, and then I think somewhere between games 3 and 5, they win 1. They stretch it to 6. But give me Golden State winning 3 in a row, and you can make it 4 of 5. I think the Dubs get it done in 6 games. Could be an entertaining NBA Finals. Maybe the most intriguing part, it's what we address with Steve Kyler. Who do you sick Kawhi Leonard on? He's unbelievable defensively. Who are you going to choose to put him on with Kevin Durant on the shelf? All right, let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Keith, who you like in the NBA Finals?
I like Golden State in 6 also. I think Kawhi is going to do some amazing things. He's going to try his best. He's going to do what Kawhi Leonard does. But in the end, even trying to shadow him, kind of trying to hide him with switches to not have him chasing these three-point shooters all around, it's still going to be asking a lot. It's going to come down to, can the Raptors coach make the right adjustments and catch Golden State off guard? Meaning, can he have the courage to sit Danny Green, put in Van Fleet, and bring some offense on a consistent basis to go along with trying to switch and find these shooters and chase them down all night long?
I couldn't have put it any better. Even without Kevin Durant, you're going to have to do some chasing. That's one of the reasons I'm not sure I want him on Steph Curry, Keith. You know, I mean, you're going to have to chase Klay around too, but I don't think I want him on Steph.
No, right. And it's a hard thing to do. And it depends also on Kyle Lowry. I mean, where is his mental going to be in this series? If he's giving up shots or not making shots, can he rise up to the occasion?
It's a great point as well, because I don't trust him defensively a ton against Steph Curry. But if he can give you 80% of the offensive production that Steph does and cuts into it, you got more than a puncher's chance. Thank you, Keith.
You got it, man.
NBA Finals coming up tomorrow. We're getting you ready a little early. CD, I'm not getting the final word yet, but this is remarkable. You are on Twitter more than any human that I possibly have ever known. Please tell me you have seen. I'm seeing it from Richard Justice, our buddy from MLB.com. Please tell me you've seen the Carlos Correa statement.
Yes. A massage, really? This is where
Hold on now. You're going to jump the gun.
Yeah.
And it's not going to have a happy ending if you do that. You got to let me read this full quote.
This is
remarkable. Carlos Correa, as we told you, he's been put on the IL, out 4 to 6 weeks with a rib injury. Here is Carlos Correa's statement per Richard Justice, MLB.com. Quote, I sustained the rib fracture during a massage at my home on Tuesday. To sustain an injury in such an unusual way makes it even more frustrating. However, I will work hard to get back on the field as quickly as possible to help our team. End quote. Wow. And now you understand, Clint, with the rib, and now you understand the in poor taste happy ending joke. All right, we got to give this hour a happy ending. How about one final word?
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Prerogative. Don't want to go too far down the Bobby Brown road here, but according to LSU AD Scott Woodward from SEC Spring Meetings today, Will Wade, yesterday and then again today, speaking with the media, it's been his prerogative. The exact quote from Woodward, it's his choice. He wanted to do it, felt like it was the best way to do it that way instead of doing it one-on-one. We supported him on that. How interesting. It was Wade's choice. LSU allowed it. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back in with James Moran. We're talking LSU baseball next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette, 103.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It is time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by. Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
It's time to get you ready for LSU baseball. Step into the on-deck circle with James Moran on 103.7 The Game.
On a Wednesday? Why the hell not? This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and yeah, we're going to lead off with our guy talking LSU baseball. Going into regional play on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. We got you for the next hour from inside the 237 Roof Studios. But first, a quick trip across the Basin Bridge over to Baton Rouge aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline. He is the editor of Tiger Rag Magazine. It's James Moran. How the heck are you, James?
Doing well, Ben. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm trying to decipher maybe what really happened to Carlos Correa. I'm not buying that he fractured a rib via a massage. I'm just not buying that, James.
It's a first. I mean, I remember, I think it was Sammy Sosa threw his back out sneezing. So I guess we've seen these kind of weird baseball injuries before, but that's a strange one, especially for a guy that's like, what is he, 22, 23? That's a strange one.
Yeah, again. That's why something smells a little fishy. But let's get to something else that's probably not strange. We're 2 days, roughly, removed from LSU versus Stony Brook, and we don't know the pitching pecking order. Again, I'm going to maintain that's not strange. They want to hold their cards close to the vest. What's your best stab at how this thing rolls out?
I think there's really two ways, or even three ways they could play this. I'm fairly confident Landon Marceau is the guy who's going to pitch the Saturday night game, assuming they win, or pitch the Saturday game, which would either be the game to advance into the finals or a win and stay alive game. I feel pretty good about that. Now, the other couple ways you can go is you could pitch Cole Henry in the first game, throw him against Stony Brook. You assume they haven't seen a lot of pitchers with that kind of velocity. Try to get three or four innings out of him, maybe five if everything goes really, really efficiently. And then have the bullpen obviously fresh behind him, and then, you know, try to win that game and move on. And then obviously you'd have Eric Walker for either a championship game on Sunday or the game to, you know, keep you alive and get you into the championship series. That's kind of the first way. The other way would be you can pitch Eric Walker on Friday night, Marceau, and then have Cole Henry in the bullpen basically ready to divide up whatever's left of the regional, you know, guys like Matt Beck. And or the other way you could go, which I don't think they're going to do, but they could do if they really wanted to be aggressive, is they could just basically pitch the bullpen in the first game, throw somebody like Hilliard or Beck or Devin Fontenot out there, and then hold all three of your pitchers to try to win the last two games. My money would probably be on the one of the first two, though I'm honestly not sure. We'll find out tomorrow morning. I'd probably go with the first one. I would pitch Henry the first game. I don't think Stony Brook's seen that kind of velocity all year. So I would throw the velocity at them. And then I would think that maybe he could, if he only pitched three or four innings, he can maybe help you also on Monday if there is a Monday.
James, I don't like option number three. I love it. But it leads me to a question. In your opinion, how much can you afford to kind of mess around with Stony Brook by doing something like the whole staff approach Friday?
Well, it would definitely be a risk. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Stony Brook's a pretty good four seed. They won their league. They won their league tournament as well to punch their ticket in here. They've got a couple veteran starting pitchers, one that's got pretty good numbers, one who is actually their ace who doesn't. I'm not sure. We had Matt Sank on Tiger Egg Radio last night. He didn't tip his hand either. He said he's pitching one of his two right-handed starters, but that's really their only real starter. So I don't think that's really giving away too much information. I just think that not only is it a risk in terms of obviously, you know, one of those bullpen guys pitches bad, what if you lose the game? That would be a disaster. But what if, you know, you end up having to use three, four, five guys and you really kind of tire out your bullpen when you still got a whole weekend to go?
Continuing to preview the Baton Rouge Regional with James Moran of Tiger Ag Magazine. In an ideal world, which relievers, both at the back end and middle relief, would you like to hold out of Friday's game and save for later play?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can get cute. I think if you need to use your top guys, you do. But if I could get through that first game without using Zach Hess and Todd Peterson, and then I could possibly throw them out there to divide up three or four innings on Saturday night or Sunday, then I'd feel really great about it. You know, those are the two guys where, you know, if I got to use them, I use them. I don't really think you can mess around this time of year. You got to treat every opponent like they're a legitimate opponent or else, you know, disaster can happen. But if I could get through Friday and not have to use those two guys, I'd really be happy with how that sets up for the weekend if I'm LSU.
So the revelation that was Giovanni DiGiacomo in Hoover, how does that change the way that Maneri maybe structures his lineup in regional play?
I think the lineup you saw the last couple days in Hoover is the lineup you're going to see this weekend. I think DiGiacomo, they might keep him in that two-hole even. I think they like his speed. They like some of the things he can do with the bat. You know, they've kind of been looking for that guy to slide in there along with Josh Smith, Antoine Duplantis, Cabrera, Watson. They haven't really been able to put him in an order they like, and it seems like maybe they found something now with DiGiacomo kind of in that two-hole as a guy that can, you know, can bunt, can hit and run, can steal some bases for you. I think the one kind of – I think we know that Saul Garza is going to be doing the catching. He's obviously been awesome for the last two or three weeks, maybe even a month or so if you want to go back that far. I think you're going to see Chris Reed at third base. I think you're obviously going to see John Smith and Cade Beloso and DiGiacomo as the DH. I think the one interesting spot is second base. Brant Broussard had some kind of an elbow injury while in Hoover. They now think it's muscular, so they're going to try to just rehab it and see if he can make it back by Friday, and I wouldn't rule that out. But if he can't go, I would think it would be Hal Hughes, and they would go for defense, but maybe you could see them try something else, and maybe you see Gavin Dugas get another shot. I'm not really sure. But I think they'd really, their best, they're honest, their best, they would really like for Broussard to be healthy, available, and then put him in the lineup at second base, and that would probably round out you seeing the same order you saw late in the week in Hoover, only with Broussard at second.
How do you feel about the teams coming in to the Baton Rouge Regional? And I guess another way of putting that, Do you think that in any way, shape, or form, the selection committee punished LSU as one of the lower 16 teams to host? How do you look at Southern Miss, Arizona State, Stony Brook coming in?
Well, yeah, I guess Stony Brook gets a lot of the attention because of what happened in 2012, but really the teams I think LSU has to watch out for here is Arizona State and Southern Miss. Arizona State hit the most home runs of any team in Division I baseball this year. They hit 92. That is a lot. I think LSU hit 58 for comparison. Now, LSU, I think the Desert Air, I think there's some theories that the ball carries really well in their park, even though it's a big park. I think that added to their numbers, but I think this is a team with legitimate big-time power. They got probably the best 1-2 power combination of any lineup in college baseball with Spencer Torkelson and Hunter Bishop. Those guys could both be first-round picks. They hit 20 and 21 home runs, I think. They both hit over 20. I know that. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head. And then if you look at Southern Miss and Matt Wallner, they also have a guy that hit more than 20 home runs. So you got three dudes with big-time, you know, future first, second-round pick type pop, and none of them play for LSU in this series. So I think LSU is going to come down to their pitching now. I think they have a much deeper staff than any of the teams they're going to see this weekend. I think the longer this regional goes, the more it favors LSU in terms of their pitching and, you know, well, assuming they pitch the way they did in Hoover, where it seemed like everybody they were bringing in was throwing the ball pretty well. But these teams have some serious pop, especially those two teams I just mentioned, and I don't think you can take Stony Brook lightly. They've got a guy in Michael Collins who hit 350 with 10 home runs that leads their team, and he missed some time this year, so he probably could have hit a few more if he was healthy all year. But it's definitely, you know, Baseball America said it's the toughest regional, and I haven't studied all of them enough to say that I wholly agree or not, but I can tell you it's probably the toughest regional I can remember LSU drawing in the 4 years that I've been on the beat. Well, besides last year when they went to Oregon State, this is the toughest regional I can remember them drawing in Baton Rouge anyway.
Finishing up our LSU baseball conversation with James Moran on 103.7 The Game. And, oh, yeah, it's a Wednesday edition of the On Deck Circle. This is a tricky question, James, and I know it, but the way that LSU plays under Palmieri and Hoover, does that sometimes set the fan base up for a little bit of fool's gold? Or do you think in this case, maybe it's actually an indicator that, you know, they're going to be better than they were during the bulk of the SEC season?
It seems like it's going both ways sometimes, you know. I mean, I feel like there's been years where it really sets the table. I mean, 2017, they won the SEC tournament, and then they came right back and swept the regional and super regional and went to Omaha. So, I mean, I don't think you can always say that they play worse in the regionals or worse in the supers than they do in Hoover, but it just seems like they always play so amazingly well in Hoover that it can definitely, I think, get a little frustrating. I just think that the way they approach that tournament, it's such a mix of, one, they're focused and they play with energy because LSU travels so well there, but also they play so relaxed. I mean, it just seems like they just do such a good job of, you know, playing with intensity but also having fun. And there seems like there's been years where then they come back in the regional, and whether it's the pressure, whether it's, you know, kind of the do-or-die nature of it compared to an SEC tournament, I'm not really sure. But it does seem like at times they're much more tense and don't play with that same kind of, you know, loose intensity, and they play more tight where, you know, it seems like they're not having a lot of fun out there. And look, losing is never fun, but they're not. I don't know if I've answered your question, but that's kind of how I think you're getting at.
No, it makes complete sense. And look, I fibbed. I got one more. I'm going to throw you away on LSU football. Brief reaction to LSU-Bama being a day game in 2019.
Pretty surprising, huh? I mean, I guess when you look at the week they chose, they want to put that Notre Dame at Georgia game on in primetime. I guess that makes plenty of sense. But it hasn't been since 2010 that LSU and Alabama played during the day. So it's assuming that it's the CBS game, and I would be pretty shocked if it's not. That's going to be a bit weird, isn't it, in Tuscaloosa?
I'm all for it. I got to tell you, anything that could be done to deconstruct this as the be-all, end-all game, I think that's a good thing for LSU right now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that. The speaking of pressure and kind of building stuff up to where you're so tight, I mean, that is the LSU-Alabama series most years.
Well, I got to speak for all of our listeners in Acadiana. You and Jeff, Tyler, kicking butt on Tiger Rag Radio. Thanks for doing it every Tuesday. Thanks for talking with us today.
No problem, Ben. Talk to you later, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your week.
He is James Moran, editor of Tiger Rag Magazine. You can also catch their work, including on-demand interviews from Tiger Rag Radio, the website tigerrag.com. Still trying to wrap my mind around a fractured rib from a massage. And has the masseuse been fired? More questions than answers, frankly, from this Carlos Correa Michigas. We'll discuss on the other side. We welcome you to join when you can. 706-0111. Open table for you. In the next segment, we'll throw a little shade at 5:30, and then we go to Tempe, Arizona, home of those mashers. Yeah, Torkelson, Bishop, a couple of guys with 43 combined home runs. Where else are the Sun Devils strong, and where are they weak? We'll learn from Andrew Bell, houseofsparky.com. We promise, unlike yesterday, we will deliver with Andrew Bell today. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're coming right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's go, people.
Come on back to me. This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
You know, I appreciate the acknowledgement on the board. The Astros did an acknowledgement on the board, and I appreciate the players that have helped me get the coaches, the organizations. I mean, this job is one of the best jobs in baseball, if not the best job in baseball, because of the people that I'm around. So I hope there's many more to come.
AJ Hinch responding to win number 500 in his career after beating the Cubbies last night. That is cool. Bumper to Bumper Sports, fairly cool ourselves. Ben and Clint taking you home and right back in on 103.7 The Game. Time to take your phone call starts now, and it's not going to last too much longer, so get them in while you can fit them in. 706-0111. The Strohs continue to play at a pretty darn torrid pace, wouldn't you say? And last night's win over the Cubs, just part of it. They'll get the Cubbies again tonight. Wade Miley on the bump for Houston. And on the other side, it's been learned that Chris Bryant will be back in the lineup as this is played in an AL stadium. The formerly injured and recently injured Cub will be able to bat DH. And so it'll be Kyle Hendricks going up against Wade Miley tonight. A couple of teams in first place in their division. Strohs looking for a sweep, trying to pull the brooms out against the Chicago Cubs. We could talk a little Cubs. We could definitely talk some NBA Finals and some Pelicans. I've got some interesting updated odds on Anthony Davis for you that I'll share in a moment. But we can also talk LSU baseball. You just got James Moran of Tiger Egg Magazine, his full take on this weekend series, how he would line up the pitchers if he were Alan Dunn. What would you do? 706-0111. You can also answer the sink or swim question of the day. Speaking of LSU baseball, who's your MVP for LSU baseball so far this season? The only response we've gotten so far on Facebook, I love it. Our man Bob S., the whirlpool machine. He's 100% right. The amount of injuries this year, especially the sore arms, the pitchers, it has been ridiculous. So, Bob, you ain't wrong. Christian L. on Twitter, Josh Smith to me because of the runners in scoring position numbers on top of everything else. It's kind of hard to ignore, Christian. Speaking of ain't wrong, when I compared him and Antoine Duplantis, there were so many areas where one dipped where the other rose up. A little bit of a peak for one, valley for the other. The power numbers were obviously better for Antoine, but the steals, I mean, the OBP getting on base, the runners in scoring position coming through in the clutch numbers, Josh Smith has had a remarkable season for LSU baseball coming back from injury. So all of those, pretty darn good submissions. Again, we got time to take yours, but I teased something a minute or two ago about Anthony Davis. And all this relates back to an interview we had with Steve Kuyler in hour number one. Steve said he believes that the Celtics are starting to fade away a little bit as a trading partner for David Griffin and the Pelicans. The reason, according to Steve Kuyler, basketballinsiders.com, pretty simple. With Kyrie Irving having a foot out of the door in Beantown, it's not likely
that they're also going to offload Jason Tatum. And so it's interesting. The latest odds that have been released, and this is where Anthony Davis will play his first game of the 2019-2020 NBA season. The Lakers are plus 100, first in the clubhouse. The Pels and the Celtics tied for second, plus 200. The New York Basketball Knickerbockers are fourth at plus 400. No chance that I'm taking the Celtics there. I really don't particularly like his chances of returning to the Pelicans either. What's that tell me? What's that tell you? What should it tell all of us? There's probably a team that's not on this list that's going to jump up with bad odds and win the Anthony Davis sweepstakes. Just kind of thinking out loud here. All right, let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Mike, thanks for the call. What's on your mind today?
Man, I don't know what's wrong with these SEC people, man. I don't know how Josh Smith didn't even make an all-defensive team in the conference. And that is ridiculous to me. And, you know, in Bull Jive, whenever, because the guy that plays for Georgia, Aaron Shook, kid batted 340, hit about 12 home runs, and had 12 saves as a relief pitcher, and he's second team all SEC.
Wow.
So that is crazy to me, bro. You're hitting 340 and you got 12 saves. You should be first team. But yeah, Josh Smith is probably the most underrated player in the SEC, and we're gonna definitely see him in Major League one day, maybe even before Antoine.
I agree. I agree on both of those fronts. He's gonna be a factor in the league probably sooner than later, and he is criminally underrated SEC wide.
Oh, no doubt, man. I see Alex Bregman and him all over again, man.
If it hadn't been for the injury last year, I think he'd be going a little more full steam with some nationwide recognition. Mike, thank you for the call. I think you're right on.
All right, buddy.
He's on it. I mean, seriously. Josh Smith is going to make one heck of a professional player one day. I don't know that he'll rise to the level of Bregman. I hate to put those expectations and saddle any kid with that. Bregman, from the time he was drafted until he got to the show in Houston, I mean, it felt like 40 winks. It wasn't long. And then two seasons later, what, he's helping win a World Series, integral part. Three seasons later, he's a top five finisher in the AL MVP voting. So those are pretty big shoes to fill. But I do think Josh Smith is going to make a great professional baseball player. And as to his point with the kid from Georgia, here's my suggestion. How do you remedy that? A couple of active brain cells working for people voting on these things. Football has all purpose for a reason. They can get a guy who's a darn good receiver, darn good corner, maybe not the best in his league, but he also pitches in a ton on special teams. Boom. AP, there's your all-purpose guy. Guy from Georgia absolutely should have filled that slot if you didn't think he was worthy from one side or the other. But let me tell you this, 12 saves is a lot. I mean a lot in a college baseball season. I mean, you think about what Matty Ott was for LSU during a magical one-and-a-half-year run. Go look those numbers up. 12 is one hell of a gold standard. So that's a really good call from Mike. I agree on just about every front. All right, we're halfway home in hour number two. Here's our agenda, our playbook. We're going to throw a little shade on the other side, and it's twofold today. A couple of stories that have happened in the last 36 hours, but they both deserve some shade. And so we'll get to those next. Andrew Bell, houseofsparky.com. Going to preview Arizona State baseball at 5:45. And then Don Allen and Company. Five guys, stories, and lies tonight from 6 to 7 before we send you right to Houston for the remainder of Astro Lodge. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're coming right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in, and yeah, we got some shade we want to throw. One on the pro basketball side, a franchise that continues to garner the shade, and a former college coach that now is coaching at the high school ranks. Normally wouldn't be a big deal this time. It is. And we are Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back in on 103.7 The Game. How about your daily reminder? It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. I'm going to encourage you to visit their website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that they're going to take time, top down, starting with the management. Mark and company will sit down with you, help you to formulate a vision, and then they're going to fulfill it just as you like before this football season. So don't wait. Let them up your patio game before the fall of 2019. Head to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Late to the party on these two stories? You betcha. Do I care? Not even a little bit. They both deserve time, and they both deserve to be in this space. Rob Pelinka told one of the world's weirdest and ultimately fakest Kobe Bryant stories of all time. This, I believe, ran in an article for ESPN, the magazine, and I'll just give you the full quote. I don't always like to read things on the radio. If this were in audio format, we'd give it to you that way, but follow me. Quote, there was one time when Kobe, who I worked with for 18 years, was going back to play in Madison Square Garden, and he had just seen The Dark Knight. Obviously, you guys saw that movie, and Kobe's like, hey, hook me up with dinner with Heath Ledger, because he got so locked into that role, I want to know how he mentally went there. So, Kobe had dinner with Heath, and he talked about how he locks in for a role. And Kobe used some of that in his game against the Knicks, end quote. There is but one small problem with that story. Heath Ledger passed away 6 months before The Dark Knight even came out. So yeah, this one's not exactly going to pass muster. Shade at Rob Pelinka, not just for the way that, well, he and Jeannie Buss seem to not be able to play with others, namely one Irvin Magic Johnson. Not just shade because the Lakers are a living dumpster fire. But come on, bro. That's an awfully weak story to make up. And there's really not even a great way to get around it and say that your timing was fudged a little. But here's your part two. And we learned this Friday night. The old media dump. Right before media day, baby. Or Memorial Day, I should say. Art Briles was announced, hired as the head coach at Mount Vernon High School in Texas. Everything is bigger in Texas, and even the snafus are that way as well. Briles, a disgraced former coach at Baylor who was fired in 2016, hasn't been able to find gainful employment since then. Not at the college level, not for the Hamilton Tiger Cats of the CFL, where he sure as hell tried. And this is, I believe, the second time that somebody from the Texas high school ranks has come swinging for Art Briles. 3 years removed from what happened at Baylor, the folks in Mount Vernon High School said, you know what, screw it, we're going to take a chance. To say that it has not gone well since Friday night would be an understatement. I'll let you go find this on the interwebs, but somebody put a mic and a camera in front of the school district superintendent, and yeah, there's just not a lot of great ways to explain that away. But here's where I'll tie a bow on it. This isn't a great look either. And I know that these words almost certainly came out of Art Briles' mouth meaning well. But given his past, the recent past in his career, oh boy, it just reads very tone deaf. Here was the statement that Art Briles gave when it was announced that Mount Vernon was hiring him on. You'll make no bigger impact in this world than when you shape the lives of young people. Do you feel as creepy all over as I do now? Just checking. Little shade needed to be thrown in both of those directions.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Again, he probably meant that well, but yeah, I don't think that guy can make that statement. That's just me from 10,000 feet here. All right, we've had a lot of fun so far. Our next interview has been 2 days in the making, and over my dead body will yesterday's error happen again. We correct that when we return. Andrew Bell, HouseOfSparky.com, a full Arizona State Sun Devil baseball preview, a scouting report for LSU baseball fans. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Andrew Bell Then it's Five Guys Stories and Lies, and then it's Astros Cubs Part 3. You're in the right place. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Back in, time to finish out the show in style. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game. We need to get a feel for the Arizona State Sun Devils, and we will right now. We missed him yesterday. Hey, that was on us. Today we atone. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Our pleasure to bring aboard Andrew Bell, the managing editor, houseofsparky.com. How the heck are you, Andrew?
I'm doing pretty well. Should be a good series this weekend between, or not good series, but a good regional this weekend in Baton Rouge. And ASU's back in the tournament. And just want to say thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to talking some baseball here.
Yeah, we're fired up, too, about the Baton Rouge regional. LSU did not host last year. Didn't go well for them. Lost at the number one overall seed at Oregon State. They are back in home, but I know Arizona State's had a little bigger break from tournament play. So what's the reception with that fan base? First time in I believe, 3 years.
It's a little bit of a mixed reaction right now. It's a very passionate fan base out here in Tempe. In the last couple of years, quite frankly, they haven't been too happy. And their head coach, Tracy Smith, kind of came into this year a little bit on the hot seat. And this was a year and a program that hasn't really been accustomed to kind of missing out in the postseason. But they kind of piece it all together this year. There's a group of fans or people who think that this team is capable enough to host a regional. So they might be a little upset with that they're playing as a two seed. And quite frankly, I think they could easily have been a regional host if things went a little differently in conference play. They started off as the lone undefeated team in college baseball and non-conference play and kind of heading into Pac-12 play. And then they kind of cooled off a little bit going through the ups and downs of conference play. But they find their way in as a two seed, and it's one of the most offensive teams in the country. I mean, they have Hunter Bishop, Spencer Torkelson, guys who can absolutely kind of bash the ball. And I saw a projection the other day that Hunter Bishop looking like he might go number 8 overall. And then MLB projection they had, or at least a top 10 pick. So really good swing in the bats, and it's going to be an exciting weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing some good baseball.
I promise I'm not going to bury the lead much longer. I want to talk more about Torkelson and Bishop, but give us the lowdown on the pitching staff and how you expect the rotation to maybe, I guess, shake out. And hypothetically, if both LSU and the Sun Devils win on Friday, I guess what most LSU fans will want to know, who do you expect would pitch in a winner's bracket game on Saturday?
Well, I know for the Friday game earlier this week, it's not 100% yet, but I would bet that Alec Marsh, who's been one of the Sun Devils' aces all season, goes for them and pitches against Southern Miss. I don't think they'll wait until game 2. I think they're going to try to win that first game and bring out their best guy. So in that case, if it does end up being LSU and ASU, I'd most likely be Boyd Vanderkoy, who, if you look at his stats right now, like if you're just, to look at his numbers and say, he has a 5-point-something ERA, it's over 5. And really, that ERA got inflated by one bad game he had against UCLA earlier this year. And then he had some rough go of things. But he really turned it around in a start against Nebraska about a few weeks ago. I want to say it was about a month ago. Had a really good start, and he's been pitching really well. He went 7 innings against Stanford of shutout baseball against the top 5 team in the country just this last weekend. So he's been pitching the ball really well. I imagine that would be who goes for ASU. He's got some really good breaking stuff, and when he has good command of his fastball, he has a 4-seam and 2-seam, and when he has command of that fastball, it makes his breaking stuff that much better. So I imagine if it does end up being the matchup, he'd be the guy that the Tigers see in that second game.
Learning plenty about the Arizona State Sun Devils on the diamond. Our guest is Andrew Bell, managing editor, houseofsparky.com, and a great follow this week and beyond on Twitter, @AndrewBell7. All right, now we get to go to, I guess, the big brawlers. And you mentioned them already. Bishop, you positioned, I think you mentioned, as maybe the number 8 overall pick in the draft. How about Torkelson, his upside, and just what makes these two guys so special?
I think what makes him so special and what's made Hunter Bishop so special is his ability. He's hitting behind Torkelson right now, but at the beginning of the year, he's hitting in front of him. I think that really kind of just helped him He's kind of pieced it all together this year. This is a guy who's last 2 years with the program. Had a little bit of some ups and downs. Wasn't playing his best baseball and kind of living up to his potential, kind of so to speak. But this year he's really kind of pieced it all together. And both these guys, when they're on, they're not just pulling the ball over the fence, which they can do. They can hit for a lot of power on the pole side. But they're driving the ball to different sides of the field. They really just complement each other really well. And another guy who kind of gets understated in that top of the order for their team and who I'd say to watch out for this weekend is Trevor Hauver. He's only a sophomore, same year as Torkelson, but he's a really highly touted recruit coming out of Arizona, a local kid, which they have a lot of local guys on the roster. But Trevor Hauver is a guy who can really, get on base. He's really good, really high on base percentage, and really works a lot of walks, but he's going to be kind of a player of the future. And so I think those three guys mixed in together between Torkelson, Bishop, Hauver, they can really, that's kind of the biggest threat in the lineup. And then you go down, you have guys like Carter Aldretti, Lyle Lynn, guys who can swing the bat pretty well as well. But like I said, when those guys are going, they're driving the ball to all different parts of the field. They can hit off-speed pitches, and it's really tough to beat them. And I imagine Paul Maneri this weekend, that will be his main point of emphasis, is trying to limit those two guys, which is a tall task. But it's going to be fun to see them on such a big stage playing at Alex Box Stadium this weekend. I know they were talking about it earlier this week. Torkelson had Paul Maneri as a coach with Team USA last summer. And, he really enjoyed that experience. He knows a couple guys from LSU's team. So I imagine they're looking forward to the experience and just playing in that type of environment.
All right, let's keep pulling at that thread a little bit, Andrew. What else were some of the players and coach saying about this trip to Baton Rouge, maybe what they're looking forward to, the biggest adjustments, all those things?
They are really excited about the opportunity. I know Hunter Bishop, the other day, his brother, who played at Washington, and he's now with the Seattle Mariners. He said he talked to his brother a little while back and had said that, Alex Box Stadium playing there postseason time is unlike anything he's ever experienced before. That's directly from his mouth. That's what he said. And so he's really looking forward to the opportunity trying to play there. A lot of guys, like I said, just really kind of hoping to embrace the moment. This is a team, too. There's only one player on the roster who's played in the postseason before. So it's a first for everyone on that team. These two guys are Bishop, Torkelson, and the rest of that junior class, everybody else involved, has been on losing teams the last 2 years. So this is the first time they're going to kind of get welcomed to the postseason. I don't think there's any better place to do it than playing at LSU in SEC country at this time of year. It's going to be a great opportunity for those guys, and they were just lighting up the other day talking about the opportunity to try and get to play there. And even head coach Tracy Smith was talking about, because originally, earlier in the season, there was a projection that had ASU possibly going to Vegas if Santa Barbara was going to play there, because Santa Barbara couldn't host a regional at their field, so they're going to play in Vegas. And so they're talking about there, and he actually said, I'm happy that we're going to Louisiana instead of Vegas, because they're going to get the full postseason experience now, kind of that playing in a hostile environment and a really good opportunity.
I'll bounce kind of all over the place. We'll go back to pitching. Give us a little bit of detail on the back end of the bullpen and some of the options that Coach Smith has there.
Yeah, so on the back end of the bullpen, I actually think that's one of the areas that LSU, with their lineup, can possibly maybe expose a little bit. I think the bullpen, there's a lot of good young arms, but a lot of them are still developing and still kind of young. But for guys to look out for, Blake Burzell, who has a mid to high 90s fastball when he's going right, is really good stuff, kind of a power arm. They like to bring him in. He kind of likes to shut guys down. And then a guy who they've put in kind of a closer role a little bit is R.J. Davidovich, who's actually originally a Sunday starter at the beginning of the year. They've kind of tweaked things around to where Davidovich isn't a Sunday starter anymore, and they've liked him more on the back end of the bullpen. So expect those two guys to come in a lot. Burzell, like I said, has a good fastball. Davidovich has good stuff as well, good breaking pitches. Fastball isn't as high octane, as I'd say, as Brazil's, but those are two of the guys who I'd say to really look out for. And then Brady Corrigan, another guy who might either start a game or come on in mid relief if things get kind of a little scary early on. He's another guy who can come in possibly in middle relief, try and help things out. But on the back end, I'd say Brazil, Davidovich, two guys to keep an eye on, and pretty good stuff, especially Brazil with that high octane fastball that he's got.
Finishing up with our guest, Andrew Bell, houseofsparky.com. We'll have a little fun on your way out. Everybody will recognize Barry Bonds as probably the most famous baseball alum at Arizona State, but give us a few more, some guys that the program really kind of hangs its hat on.
Oh, understand. Well, I was thinking about that this weekend, just looking at the matchups, you know, between LSU and ASU. You just think of all the different guys in the history between the two programs. And if you're like a college, if you're a college baseball fanatic, I don't think there's anything better than seeing these two programs. I mean, just all the history between the two, and really the fact that they haven't really played too much on the postseason stage. But for ASU, I'd say people you might not know about who have their names out in the Wall of Honor, they like to call it Phoenix Municipal Stadium, Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, you know, a baseball legend, used to play for ASU, and then Dustin Pedroia as well. Dustin Pedroia played, was a Sun Devil. Trying to think of other guys like Mike Leake, who's in the major leagues right now, Cole Calhoun on the Anaheim Angels, Jason Kipnis on the Cleveland Indians. I'll name my current guys. I'm trying to go back. Sal Bando, if you want to go way back, who played with the Oakland Athletics way back in the 70s. But there's just guys down the list who you just look at the alumni and you just, your eyes pop out a little bit. And they like to nickname the place MLBU. And I don't know if it's a little bit of an over-exaggeration, but there sure are a lot of great names on the list. So I'd say Reggie Jackson, Dustin Pedroia, definitely up there with Bonzo as top three. And I'm sure there's guys I'm missing, too, who a lot of Sun Devil fans could point out. But, yeah, quite a list of names who have gone through the halls here.
Yeah, that's a bang-up list, amigo. I just wasn't sure if maybe lefty Phil Mickelson ever came from the golf course and took a couple hacks over in Tempe.
Yeah, no, Phil Mickelson, John Rahm on the golf course. They've had it all now that they got Herm Edwards running the football program too. So all sorts of, you know, notable names down the list around campus in Tempe. So it's pretty cool to get an opportunity to cover some of these names. And even if you want to go to the basketball court, you can look at James Harden too, I guess. But that's kind of the only one on the basketball court. But yeah, a lot of notable names.
You said Herm Edwards. I'm resisting the temptation to go full out Herm Edwards voice and say, you play to win the game. I do know this.
It's been a lot. That's what we're going to try to do.
It's been a lot of fun talking to you. If you're coming this way, safe travels. But, Andrew, we're looking forward to baseball in Baton Rouge.
Definitely. Like I said, it should be a fun weekend. See, you know, ASU go into that type of environment. I'm really going to be interested and intrigued to see what goes down this weekend. I know it's just crazy. It's a whole different atmosphere that time of year and in that stadium. So it should be fun. And thank you so much for having me, too. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's going to be a fun weekend, and we do have to thank Andrew Bell, the rest of our guests as well. Steve Kuyler talking NBA, James Moran, the LSU side of things. Little Wednesday on Deck Circle, but we got to get out of the way. Five Guys, Stories and Lies featuring Don Allen is coming at you next. Don't forget, B2BS tomorrow will be live 4 to 7, the full three-hour Monty from the Tap Room River Ranch. You don't want to miss it. There's no rhythms on the river. That's okay. We'll have the swan song of Jeff Horchek with us live at the Tap Room. They'll have live music when I'm done from 8 to 11. You could say that it's all the way live, and you wouldn't be lying. All right, we got to get out. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love and Clint Domingue on a Wednesday on 103.7 The Game.